Welcome back to the Power Hour, ladies and gentlemen. It's 8 minutes after the hour, wherever you're sitting. So glad to have you on board. In our quest for the truth, of course, we are drawn to people like John Perkins. He was a chief economist at a major international consulting firm. He advised the World Bank, United Nations, IMF, U.S. Treasury Department, Fortune 500 companies, and countries in Africa, Asia, Latin America, and the Middle East. He worked directly with heads of state, CEOs of major companies. His books on economics and geopolitics have sold more than 1 million copies. And it is a bestseller. His books that he have written, they are bestsellers, ladies and gentlemen. And, of course, you've heard of The Confessions of an Economic Hitman, 70 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list. And John has been on the Power Hour before, and we're so glad to have him join us again. And, of course, the book I told you I wish I could have written, The Secret History of the American Empire. Thank you so much, John Perkins, for joining us in the Power Hour today.
My pleasure to be with you, Joyce. Thanks for having me on your show.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you for what you're doing. Now, you were involved with some of the worst in the world of corporatism or corporatocracy or whatever we want to call it now. But you are now shedding light on the incredible fraud perpetrated on the American people and the people of the world. First of all, if you would just define for us, what do you mean by a corporate hitman or economic hitman? What is your definition of an economic hitman?
Well, you know, really, best to define it by describing what I did in general. There were a lot of things we did, but in general, what we would do is identify countries with resources that corporations covet, like oil, arrange a huge loan to that country from the World Bank or one of its sister organizations. But the money would never actually go to the country. Instead, it would go to our own corporations to build infrastructure projects in that country, things like power plants and industrial parks and highways that would benefit a few wealthy families in those countries, as well as our own corporations. Benefited the people that own the industries, that use the electricity, that use the highways, that own the industrial parks. But it didn't help the majority of the people. In fact, it left the country holding so much debt that it badly cut into their health care systems, their school systems, their social beneficial systems. And in the end, the country would end up owing so much money it couldn't possibly repay. We'd go back and say, hey, you know, since you can't pay your debt, sell your oil real cheap or whatever the resource was to our companies without any environmental or social regulations, privatize, you know, sell or almost give away your electric utilities, your water and sewage systems, your schools, your prisons to our corporations. It was really about privatizing the world. It was really about creating this global empire that we have today. It's a corporate empire. It's not an American empire. And I have to say, Joyce, that one of the things was that when we failed, when leaders of countries did not buy into this game that we were offering them, the jackals would go in, and these are people who would overthrow governments or assassinate their leaders. I talk in my books about how two of my clients, democratically elected president of Ecuador, Jaime Roldós, and the head of state of Panama, Omar Torrijos, neither one of them would buy this deal. They had a lot of integrity. They would not put their countries into this kind of debt, and they were both assassinated by CIA-sponsored jackals.
Mm. You know, on page 146, you talk about a history of assassinations, and you said that you walked into El Presidente's office. Now, who are you speaking of here, President Tum?
And I believe that's a reference to the role. You see the role those of Ecuador or Torrijos of Panama, I believe.
Okay. And you said, I stuck my left hand into my jacket and said, Mr. President, in here I've got a couple of $100 million for you and your family if you play the game. Mm-hmm. And then you stepped closer and said, I stepped back and recited a list from him of all the presidents who were assassinated or overthrown because they didn't go along with them. I mean, this is a real story. This really happened?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. It happened a number of times. It wasn't just presidents either. It was ministers of finance, ministers of planning, sometimes vice ministers that would go all along. And, you know, we know of all these presidents, that they knew of all the presidents that had been assassinated, like Arbenz of Guatemala, Mossadegh of Iran, Allende of Chile, Lumumba of the Congo, Diem of Vietnam. Oh, the list is extensive. But beyond that, there are a lot of people below presidents that have also been taken out. And sometimes it's done through character assassination, especially today. Increasingly, you don't need to kill a man or a woman. You just need to, you know, expose them with a sex scandal or a drug scandal. And sometimes it doesn't even need to be true. You create rumors, and the rumors can destroy a person. And they know this. These heads of state know that they're very vulnerable, either to coups or bullets or rumors. Recently, in 2009, the CIA took out the president of Honduras, President Zelaya, overthrew him in a coup. And another coup against Correa of Ecuador in 2010. And that one didn't succeed. Well, it did succeed. We didn't overthrow him, but we got him to totally change his policies. These things go on all the time, yes.
Well, you go from continent to continent. You give examples of what happened in Asia, the sweatshops, tsunami profiteering. Then you go into Latin America, the Middle East, Africa. And I'd like for you, if you don't mind, to give some examples of situations that you know fairly well. Because, of course, the government says that your book is all lies, you're just imagining all this, or it's a nice story or whatever, and they give you no credibility whatsoever for having done this. But you were there, and you work for a corporation, and your job was to go in and do this very thing of destabilizing that country. Give us some real examples of situations that happened in some of those continents.
Okay, but before I do, Joyce, I just want to say that the government only used one argument to say that I was lying, and that was, and they actually had a website, a misinformation website, that I was the only person on it. And what they said is that I'm obviously lying because I say I was recruited by the National Security Agency. In the National Security Agency, and then they quoted its mission statement, which says that the National Security Agency only does cryptography, encoding and decoding messages. Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's evidence for me. Yeah, that's all the evidence I need to know that you're lying.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I tell you, back when they made that website in 2005, a lot of people didn't know. I think most people suspected. A lot of people did know that the NSA did a lot more than that. We clearly know that now. You know, Edward Snowden's revelations have clearly exposed all that. But that was the basis of them saying that I was lying. They have never disputed any of the facts presented in the books. And incidentally, these presidents that I mentioned before that we've overthrown or assassinated, we've admitted to most of them. Henry Kissinger talked about his role in some of these assassinations, like Allende in Chile. The New York Times did a very thorough vetting of the book and concluded that it was telling the truth. So I just wanted to clearly establish that ahead of time. And we understood that the State Department put out this misinformation website because from around the world they were getting requests from ambassadors who were being asked by various people, well, what's the official position on this book? The book's out in about 40 languages. And the ambassadors and other politicians didn't know what to say, so the State Department felt compelled to come out with it. Anyway, so specific examples. Well, let me use a very recent one, and that is the 2009 coup against Zelaya. Even though I was not directly involved in that, it was very similar to the ones I was involved in. I know exactly what happened in Honduras. Zelaya was going to increase the minimum wage by 60%. Honduras has one of the lowest minimum wages in the hemisphere, Haiti and Honduras. And so if he did that, it would force every other country in the hemisphere to increase their wage rate a bit because nobody wants to go below Honduras and Haiti. And it had a huge impact on Russell Athletic and a number of other athletic supply companies that have sweatshops in Honduras. At the same time, he wanted to make a constitutional amendment that would take away a lot of the land rights from big organizations. Dole and Chiquita were extremely incensed. They would have been impacted in a very large way. The people who picked the crops for Dole and Chiquita would have gotten raises. The land would have reverted back to other people who then would have leased it to Dole and Chiquita. Dole and Chiquita would have had to just cough up a lot more money. Economic hitmen went in and tried desperately to convince Zelaya to change his ways. He wouldn't do it. So the CIA sent in a bunch of jackals. It was a coup. It was classic. It was very similar to the coup that had been launched against Arbenz in Guatemala in the 50s. It was a classic case. And Zelaya was overthrown. He wasn't assassinated. He had to go into exile. He was replaced by a president named Lobo, who was a brutal, brutal dictator. Today, Honduras is classified as the most dangerous country in the hemisphere, one of the most dangerous in the world where there's not actual war going on. It has the highest homicide rate in the hemisphere and one of the highest in the world. It's a catastrophe, all because the president tried to get decent wages for his people and revert land rights back to people so that big foreign corporations would have to pay people to use their land.
You know, it seems like the more we hear these stories, the more we realize that probably every place we have touched with our imperialism is that we have done this very thing in other countries. I mean, it would be easier for you to probably talk about the countries that we have not had these kinds of dealings with, wouldn't it?
I honestly can't think of any countries where we haven't been involved that are countries that have resources. And
wow.
Resources sometimes these days include just cheap labor. And today we're even involved very deeply in European countries. And the economic hitmen now come back to roost in the United States, where we're being hit very hard.
Wow.
In the United States.
And
I like the fact that you use the word imperialism, because it is that. And I think what's important to understand, too, is that people in those countries know it's happening in this huge amount of
wow. Okay, we got a four-minute break coming at us. We'll be back with the John Perkins. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen, johnperkins.org. We'll be right back. Four-minute break. Welcome back to Power Hour. Thank you so very much for joining us, caring about your world, and doing the next right and honorable thing. That seems to be what our government does not do, or the corporatocracy does not do. They do the most expedient thing for greed and power. And joining us today is a person who knows that probably better than most people, if not everybody, John Perkins. He is the author of Confessions of an Economic Hitman, johnperkins.org. John, you were talking about, as we went to the break, about things happening in the United States. I mean, we can talk about Asia, Latin America, Africa, which is, that's major now, what we're doing and dipping our toe into Africa's business and the Middle East. But what do you mean about what's happening in the United States?
Well, Laura, I think what we've really seen is the success of this whole economic hitman approach has created this global empire that's, and really it's run by what I call the corporatocracy, the heads of big corporations, Wall Street, etc., in cahoots with government. Incidentally, this is not a conspiracy theory. It's not about a small group of people banding together to do something illegal and secretive. And most of these people don't even know each other, but they're all driven by one goal, and we can talk about that later if you want. But they've discovered that it works so well overseas, let's use it here in the United States. So we saw this recession that we had, which was really driven by a conspiracy to bilk the American people. There's no question about it. This is not, again, a conspiracy theory of an overwhelming conspiracy to take over the world. But Wall Street, a lot of the bankers on Wall Street basically get together and plotted to use derivatives, to use in mortgage loans, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, to bilk the American people. We've seen this over and over. We're seeing it now with the division between blacks and whites and police and the people on the street. There's this huge divisive movement that's going on in this country, Republicans and Democrats, that basically disempower all of us and open the door for this corporatocracy to have increasing amounts of power. And I think it's also important for us to recognize that we, the people, have to take responsibility. Yes, they're bilking us. Yes, they're deceiving us. Yes, there's a conspiracy. We're part of it. You know, we have to stand up and understand this and take the reins, because nobody else is going to do it for us, because basically everybody in a power position is part of the system and stuck in the system, trapped in it, even if they don't want to be. They're trapped in the system.
Well, when you talk about how serious this is, I mean, are we talking about all the major businesses that exist in other countries have been affected by this, are doing this? And also, you mentioned the jackals that are sent in. What is the meaning of a jackal? Who are they in real life?
Well, most of the jackals today, it's a long story, because in my day, the jackals were basically hired by the CIA. Most of them were not CIA agents. They're contractors. The CIA has tremendous connections with drug traffickers around the world and the underworld. In many countries, they can hire their people. They also have a lot of people that come out of the special forces, out of our own military group, that are essentially what we call mercenaries, and they're hired to carry out these coups and these assassinations. Now today, major corporations also have their version of jackals, and these jackals work on a much more subtle level to a large degree. That they'll go in and threaten to expose somebody's affair. They'll let their wife know that a major CEO is having an affair. You can bet there were jackals out there going after Petraeus, General Petraeus, who was former director of the CIA. He eventually admitted to what he was doing and got a slap on the wrist, a very small slap on the wrist, $100,000 fine, and his average speaking fee is greater than that. So we get the jackals today now use many more subtle means. They don't have to just use bullets and coups anymore, although they still do that also.
Well, interesting to us is that the Power Hour has a listener that lived in Libya, and I'm changing over to Libya now, but I mean something of recent happening. They were living in Libya and knew exactly what was going on over there, and also had contacts that lived across the street from Benghazi, or from the lived across the street from the of the alleged, because it really wasn't a official government facility there. It was a rented house. But when that building burned, and of course Ambassador Stevens was drugged through the street, which I don't think the U.S. would ever allow any pictures like that, but we learned the real story of that. And I know you're interested in what's happening today, and that was a fascinating story to learn what took place with respect to Libya. So, every country, it seems like, every single country. And then, like you say, the jackals go in, and it's just... it's devastating when we learn how much has been orchestrated that we thought were just events taking place around the world. We'll be back with our guest today, John Perkins, after this 3-minute break. Stay tuned to the Power Hour. John Perkins is our guest today. JohnPerkins.org. JohnPerkins.org. His book is just absolutely the thing that you're going to want to read to be able to talk about what the real history is, or the secret history of the American Empire. Also, of course, Confessions of an Economic Hitman, which you can get just about anywhere. And John has a new book coming out shortly. And also, tell the listeners, if you would, please, about your Love Summit that's coming up.
Well, thanks very much, Joyce. One of the things that I feel very strongly about is what I mentioned a little earlier, that we the people really need to take responsibility and understand what's going on. And part of that means getting the business community deeply involved. While we have this corporatocracy that sits at the top of our biggest businesses, there's hundreds of thousands of people who work for corporations, people who run smaller businesses, entrepreneurs who are not part of this, and are in very powerful positions. And we need to get them more bought into the idea that the goal of big corporations of maximizing profits, regardless of the social and environmental costs, is what's really driving this whole system. We need to move into a new model for business, a new philosophy that says that business is about helping people. It's about, yes, owners need to make a decent profit. They need to pay themselves a good salary. They need to have enough capital to keep going. But beyond that, it's about compassion. It's about serving a public interest. So a nonprofit I created called Dream Change, and you can go to dreamchange.org as well as johnperkins.org. This nonprofit is sponsoring and organizing an amazing summit in Portland, Oregon, June 13th. And it's really, we've got some major business names. Dan Price, who's the CEO of Gravity Payments, and has been in the news a lot because they took a cut in salary from $1 million to $70,000 and pays all of his 120-person staff $70,000, so he pays himself the same as them. We've got the Minister of State from Ecuador coming to speak. Dan Wyden, the CEO of the largest advertising agency in the world, privately owned advertising agency. We've got businessmen. The whole idea is to teach businesses, to teach all of us, that we need to have compassion running this world. Business needs to have a new goal. Serving a public interest, which actually is the goal that legally businesses had to have for the first 100 years the United States was a country. No corporation could get a license to operate unless it proved it was going to serve a public interest. That all changed in the late 1800s when the Supreme Court decided that businesses had the rights but not the responsibilities of persons, of individuals. We need to turn that around and understand that the only way we're going to make a world that our children will want to inherit is to get everybody, including business, behind this idea that we must create a better world, and that has to be the driving force for all institutions, including those that are profit motivated. Profit should not be the only motivation. And businesses need to make some profit, but yes, they don't need to make these huge windfall profits and exploit the rest of us the way they've been doing.
Absolutely. I'm so glad that you deal with the other half of this, which is how to change the world. And we'll probably have you back on again to talk about that subject. I know you're going to be focusing on that in your new book. I want to open up the phone lines. Those of you who are proficient in some form of political history that really impacts you in one of the countries or continents that we talked about, if you would like to ask a question to our guest today, John Perkins, or how it happens, the economic hitmen and the jackals do it, do what they do. Give us a call at 855-995-6923, 855-995-6923. If you have a question or comment, you'd like to talk to John Perkins. John, you know, someone came to me one time, Special Forces, and when I was involved in a lot of the stuff that was going on with the Gulf War, and he told me that he had personally been responsible for the killing of Pablo Escobar. And at the time, I thought, yeah, all right, sounds like a nice story or whatever, but the more I look into it, the more I realize that that story also was a lie, that the United States has probably been instrumental in most of, and I mean if most of, if not all, of the assassinations around the world. I mean, is it possible that it could be that bad that our country is responsible for the assassinations?
Well, yeah, absolutely. Certainly not all of them. I mean, there are a lot of bad guys around the world. Russia's
right.
Involved in things. China's involved in things, too. There's a lot going on. But in the case of Pablo Escobar, there's no doubt about that. The CIA is deeply involved in the drug cartels, at that time Colombia. Now it's much more Mexico. You know, the CIA makes a tremendous amount of money out of these drug wars. And the big industries make a lot of money out of selling weapons, guns, and many other things that support these wars. We have to know that the CIA is only partially financed through the black boxes that government gives it in financing. A lot of its financing comes from illegal activities in other countries. This goes way back to the time of the Golden Triangle during the Vietnam War when that was financing them, the Iran-Contra dealings, which we now know a lot about. It actually goes back to the British example of the opium wars in Asia. That's what really sort of started this model. But drug wars are a big part of this. And Escobar went south with the CIA, and so the CIA went after him big time.
Well, he told me every single part of that story. There was no doubt. I mean, practically his ticket number on his flight down there. So there's no doubt that I believe his story. Let's go to the callers. We've got Renee in North Carolina. Renee, you're on the air with John Perkins. Go ahead, please.
Yes. You know, I really don't think this just happens internationally. I'm originally from Louisiana. Now, Louisiana, resource-wise, is one of the wealthiest states in the nation. But the people are the poorest. Actually, I think this same system of getting the people in government in Louisiana to sell out the people of Louisiana, but other, the same system he describes overseas, I highly suspect this is done to Louisiana.
Okay. John, your response?
Well, yes, and that's exactly what I was saying earlier, that this has definitely come back to haunt our country. And, you know, off the air, Joyce, you and I were talking about what's going on in Baltimore, and it's another example that, you know, there's this huge, let's call it a conspiracy in this country, to separate, to cause division between blacks and whites, between the poor and the police forces, the rich and the poor, the Democrats and the Republicans. And certainly Louisiana has been a huge part of that. There's no question about that. Yes, Louisiana is a very rich state resource-wise. And so the big corporations covet what's there in Louisiana. Absolutely correct. I think that, and I think what the listener is saying is also true in Texas. It's true in California. It's true in New York. It's true in the state where I live, the state of Washington. It's true throughout so much of the United States.
Absolutely. Anything else? Okay, we're going to go to Linda in Austin. Linda, you're on the air. Go ahead, please, with John Perkins.
Good morning. I'm so glad you're there.
Thank you.
We feel that fluoride added to the water, because it's not natural calcium fluoride. It's hexafluorosilicic acid, to which big agribusiness, big pharma, takes their phosphate fertilizer waste and puts it in scrubbing towers with sulfuric acid, and then has to ship it around the United States to sell to water utilities as fluoride. And I'm wondering, how would you recommend that the public be able to approach business and say, we don't want your fluoride, your phosphate fertilizer waste that you call fluoride? And I'll take my answer off the air.
All right.
Well, Linda, thanks for bringing that up. And the public has tremendous power here. Referendums, you know, get on the ballot in every state where you possibly can. Referendums, you know, we've seen that these things do work. And it's easy sometimes to feel overwhelmed by everything. But if you think back just a few years, back in 1987, the Supreme Court totally condemned gay people and gave them no rights at all. Today, gay marriages are legal in a great many states. We've seen huge changes in the way so much is done in the United States. We've seen polluted rivers cleaned up. We've gotten rid of apartheid in South Africa that was put into place mainly by our corporations. We've had tremendous success in certain movements. Here in my state of Washington, we were not successful this last year with getting GMOs labeled, but I think we will be in the future. We were successful with getting marijuana legalized. That's huge. Some of these things are amazing. So the important thing is for you, Linda, to you know, get on Facebook, get on emails, get out there, organize. Organize a resistance movement. Organize new laws to be passed on referendums. Speak out. Get the message out there. I did not know that about fluoride, which you just told me. And I didn't know it. A lot of people don't know it. You have to get the message out and then get people to act. But we can do that. But we, the people, have to make it happen. We too frequently look to our leaders to make it happen. They're not going to make it happen. We have to do it. You have to do it, Linda, and I have to do it. And thank you so much for bringing that up. And incidentally, again, that's what this Love Summit in Portland, Oregon, on June 15th is all about, is getting people to take responsibility, getting people to spread the good news, to spread the love, to do things, to take actions that show compassion. Getting dangerous chemicals out of our water and food is one of those things.
Well, I to Linda's credit, she is a Fluoride Free Austin group. She is an amazing person, has been doing this for a long, long time, and she never gives up because she believes so strongly in what she's doing. And that's what we have to do. You know, my issue may be, well, mine is that I'm vaccine injured from the Gulf War, so my issue, one of mine is the vaccine issue and now mandatory vaccination coming down the pike. So, you know, whatever it is, you don't give up and you don't stop. And there are more and more of us coming together, because we have realized that there has been a massive program of deception on the American public with everything. I don't care what it is, that we need to stop this, and we need to be the people that do it, like you say. You know, one thing I wanted to mention is, you know how the United States labels Syrian President Assad as being such a bad guy. You know, he kills his own people. Well, you know, he was one of the first people to say no GMOs in Syria. You know, as an ophthalmologist, he made that decision, no GMOs in Syria. And so, you know, when they try to pull off the idea that he kills all of his people, but he won't let them have GMOs, maybe we need to rethink, is he really killing his people? Let's go to Julie, and where did you say, Scott? Julie in where? Alabama. Julie in Alabama, you're on the air with John Perkins. Go ahead, please.
Hello. I was very impacted by reading the book Confessions of an Economic Hitman.
Uh-huh.
And even more than 9/11, it really opened my eyes.
Wow.
And when I read it, I'll tell you what I thought about. I thought, when I was a kid and I watched Mission Impossible with my dad, those stories were true. It's my impression I got. And what I thought, you know what? My dad, who I considered a very upright, moral Christian man, never commented on the immorality of what they were doing in that show. And so my conclusion, as I've thought about this, is we are at fault. Our parents are at fault because... I don't know, it was just, I don't know what happened. Somehow they got to accept the fact that there were two sets of standards, that the government somehow didn't have to live by the standard that the everyday man lived by. And also, I found that, for instance, my mother, when I tried to get her to read that book, I mean, she was just, I don't understand. It was some kind of a, you think she was brainwashed. She would not listen to it. She was not capable of believing that those things were true. And I just felt that we are the problem.
Good point.
We are.
Okay, well, let's ask John what his thoughts are. John?
Well, Julie, I absolutely. Thank you for bringing that up. And your family is representative of what the course of any of us have been. I come from something, a very similar family, that we just close our eyes to this. You know, people that are living kind of the good life in the United States, the TV life, you know, we get nice houses and clothes and go shopping at the malls and so on. We're a bit complacent because we've got what we've been told is what we want, and we want to keep it. Those who don't have such things are complacent because they're just trying to eke out a living and keep ahead of the game. And so we're very vulnerable to the propaganda. But we've got to recognize that we have to take that back. That's what a democracy is all about. And so you keep speaking out. And Linda, who's going after fluoride, and everybody out there, just keep speaking out. And it's so much easier today than it's ever been before. The Internet is extremely powerful. We've seen the power of the Internet through Edward Snowden and WikiLeaks, through these sorts of things, through the Occupy movement, through the Indignados in Spain today, and the Zapatista movements, and the Arab Spring. The Internet is so powerful. You know, if every one of your listeners, Joyce, picks a cause and two or three times a week sends an email to 10 of their people, or Twitter or Facebook announcement, or 20 people, however many, and ask each of those people to send it to 10 of their people or 20, and each of them to send it. Keep sending it out. You know, you're sending emails to Monsanto. Send emails to Nike. Send emails to whatever your cause is, the fluoride cause. Keep them going, you know, formulate an email that goes to these companies, that goes to the politicians, and ask all your friends to do it. Make it simple. Make it straightforward. You know, say things like, hey, Nike, I love your products, but I'm not going to buy them anymore until you pay your laborers in Indonesia something better than slave wages. These kinds of messages, the CEOs read them. They don't read them, but they read matrices. They get somebody there that's reading them, and every month the CEO gets a matrix that tells them, what are your customers saying? What are the emails that are coming in? This means something. Keep
yes,
up
it does.
The message.
Yes, it does, ladies and gentlemen, and more so even than voting, because we know voting is corrupted also. But, you know, we have to do the next right and honorable thing. We'll be back. Final segment coming up with John Perkins. Stay tuned to the Power Hour, johnperkins.org. Welcome back to the Power Hour. Thank you so much for being a part of this today and for wanting to know the truth. You know, this is not an entertainment program. This is so we can figure out how to reclaim our country, how we can take back the freedom that has been lost, that we have given up, unfortunately, by just trusting two guys from every state that said that they would go and represent us. Yeah, you bet. John Perkins is our guest today. He is the author, of course, of The Confessions of an Economic Hitman, which he is so well known for, a major, major bestseller, and also The Secret History of the American Empire. Let's go back to the phones and Phil in Florida. Phil in Florida, you're on the air. Go ahead, please, Phil.
Oh, yes. Hi, Joyce. Welcome back.
Hi there.
And
thank you so much.
Mr. Perkins, thanks for all you've been doing mm-hmm. over the years. And I want to accentuate what his suggestion about not looking to leaders as far as to fix the problem. We have to do something ourselves, and that's something that's a common theme of this program, the Power Hour, and its listeners. But, you know, and as far as activism as well, not just leaders in politics and all, the anti-war movement, for a perfect example. And I was wondering if that I've been suggesting getting Professor Michelle Chasadovsky of Global Research on as a guest, if and when you can.
We're trying. But
yeah.
What, do you have a question for our guest?
Yes, I do. The manufactured dissent that Professor Michelle Chasadovsky has been writing about for years, and we all know about it, and I actually just gave an example, the anti-war movement, and the fix is what Mr. Perkins has been saying. Do something each day. Just if it's just one thing, do something.
Yes, yes.
And I'll
absolutely.
Shut up and listen off air. Thank you.
Well, and I want to say thanks to Phil, because he is the anti-war movement in Florida. He has done so much, and he is trying to, and he's former military, too, just like myself, trying to tell the truth about what war is all about. Do you want to comment on anything he said or comment on the war issue and why that is so important?
Well, sure, Joyce. I think that, you know, the war issue is just so symbolic of everything else that's going on. You know, we know now that the weapons of mass destruction was a lie, and that was another conspiracy. There's all these little conspiracies that lead up to bigger ones. We know that a lot of what's going on in the Middle East is dividing and conquering, just like kind of what's going on in Louisiana and in Baltimore and everywhere else, set people against each other, Sunnis against Shiites, Jews against Muslims, et cetera, all of us against each other. And so it's so important that we speak out, and thank goodness for shows like yours. People around the world are waking up. I think there's a consciousness revolution going on. As I travel all over the world these days, and when I speak at places like the Love Summit that's coming up in Portland, Oregon in June, and so forth, what I hear and what I see from people is people really are waking up all over the world. I feel this in Latin America. I feel it in Asia, China, the former Soviet countries, Europe. People are getting it, just like your listeners. But now, in addition to waking up and understanding and having this consciousness revolution, we also need to take action. We need to keep speaking out. We need to send emails. We need to organize consumer movements. We need to organize political movements that are beyond the Democrats and Republicans, who are basically the same. We need to keep moving forward and doing things. That's what democracy is all about. We need to take back democracy and understand that we have a huge role. Every one of us needs to play in this game. And we need to have fun doing it. It can be fun. I'm having fun. You're having fun.
Good.
I think your listeners are having fun.
Yes, yes. And they're fascinated by the information that you share with us, because you go through country by country, continent by continent, where the United States has done this. And I just cannot say enough for the book. Listeners, I hope you will get excuse me, The Secret History of the American Empire by John Perkins, johnperkins.org, and dreamchange.org. Thank you so much, John. We look forward to having you back on the show again.
My pleasure, Joyce. Keep up your great work.
Oh, thank you. You have a blessed day.
many things that's held us down, but now it looks like things are finally coming around. I know we've got a long, long way to go, and where we'll end up, I don't know. But we won't let nothing hold us back. We're putting our show together, we're polishing up our act. And if you've ever been held down before, I know you refuse to be held down anymore. Well,
don't you let nothing, nothing
stand in your way.
I want you to listen, listen
to every word I say, every word I say.
Ain't no stopping us now.
We're on the move. Trying to make it, they only push you aside. They really don't have nowhere to go. Ask them where they're going, they don't know. But we won't let nothing hold us back. We're gonna put our show together, gonna polish up our act. Well, and if you've ever been held down before, I know you refuse to be held down anymore. Ain't no stopping us now.
No stopping.